Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, February the 12th. Actually, February the 13th. I got my dates wrong. Today, of course, is Super Bowl Sunday, and we hope your favorite team wins. I think Cincinnati's going to win, but, you know, I don't really have a dog in this fight, but I just want a good football game. Well, a few weeks ago, we had a conversation with Tina Aviles, and we interviewed her as part of our video series. And we wanted to bring that interview for you today. For those of you who listen to the podcast, we wanted to give you the opportunity to hear the interview that we had with Tina Aviles. Tina is the grassroots coordinator for the Libre Initiative. And this is an organization out of Washington, D.C. that is having a lot of success, you know, talking about school choice and going around the country and, you know, telling people about the story of school choice. And she is here in the North Texas area. And I had a chance to meet her a couple months ago, and we've been in touch, and we wanted to do a video interview. We did. So you're going to hear the audio of that video interview. So let me introduce you to Tina Aviles. And here it goes, Tina Aviles. Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, February the 6th. And we're going to continue our video series talking to interesting people and touching on some fabulous topics. And today, one of my very favorite topics, school choice, is on the agenda. And joining us is our friend Tina Aviles with the Libre Initiative. And I'm going to introduce Tina in a second. But school choice is a real favorite of mine, something that I have been interested in for a very long time. And so it's a great honor to have you, Tina. Welcome to the show, please.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. And it certainly is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I started out as a child advocate, and first and foremost, I continue to consider myself a child advocate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think all of us are in a way. I mean, so if you have children at some point, you are a child advocate. And I think when it comes to education, I know how important education was to my parents. I know how important it was to us with our sons, even though they're now grown and no longer in school. But it's a topic that all of us care a great deal about, because educating the next generation, as you know, is an extremely important, not just educating them, but making sure they get the full education, the civics, responsibilities, and all of that that go with it. So why don't we get started by you telling us a little bit about yourself, and then talk about Libre, the organization that you represent, Tina.
Sure. So I mentioned earlier, at heart, I'm a child advocate. My background is in education. I have a degree in child development. But I think more so than that, I'm the mom of seven children. And so I've had this unique experience and this unique journey. I taught in public schools and in private schools. But not only that, when it came time to choose an educational format for my oldest son, we quickly realized that homeschool was going to be the best choice for him. So I homeschooled some of my children. The first two were homeschooled all the way through, so I'm what we call a completed homeschooler. The second two did a mix of homeschool, co-ops, and even a private Christian school. And then the last three are doing all public ed. That may change as they get older, because they're currently in elementary school. So I've had the experience of being a public school educator, a private school educator, a homeschool educator, as well as a parent in all three situations as well.
Right. You're mother of seven. That certainly gives you a lot of experience in dealing with children and doing homework. I bet you had to do a lot of homework when you were bringing up these seven kids. Just a quick thing I wanted to point out. I read the other day, this is not about our topic tonight, but maybe it is about the topic as well, but I read the other day that 11% of the children in the country right now are homeschooled. And I was a bit surprised at that figure. I thought it was too high. But does that seem realistic to you, 11%?
You know, I actually think that's probably a little low. When I look at the number of students that we have worked with, we worked with a civics-minded civics education group through a National Homeschool Association. And so when we would have our meetings and our events, we would see students from all across the nation. So I have an interesting perspective of seeing homeschooling from across the nation and interacting on a, you know, really well with a variety of students from across the nation. So I think that's kind of probably low. And I think that's partly because some states require homeschool registration and some states don't. It is something that's decided on a state-by-state basis. And so I would suspect that 11% is pretty low. And I also suspect that it is rapidly growing. As you indicated earlier, with the pandemic and the awareness that has come from that, I suspect that that number is actually probably larger.
Yeah, and in all fairness, that's a pre-pandemic number, the 11%. I don't know that we have figures now, but it does seem that I meet more and more people who are homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Now, many of them, all of the ones I know, it's the mother who's the teacher. The father's working and the mother is at home doing the schoolwork. You know, one of the reasons I think, by the way, that homeschooling is so successful is because mothers know how to keep discipline. And they know how to keep discipline, and the kids understand that, you know, mother is pretty direct when it comes to obedience and discipline. And that's something, in all fairness, they're not getting in public education. I think a lot of the dissatisfaction with public education is, in fact, the breakdown of discipline in the classroom. Well, let's talk a little bit about Libre. I've had the opportunity to know your organization for a few years through our friend Israel Ortega. He was the one who introduced you to me as well as to the organization. So talk a little bit about Libre and some of its objectives, please.
Sure. So the Libre Initiative is an organization. Our mission is to break barriers so that more can achieve their American dream. And we do that by focusing for our purposes within the Latino community and looking at five key areas that seem to be top barriers to people within the Latino community achieving their American dream. So we focus on economic opportunity, educational opportunity, healthcare access, immigration reform, and criminal justice reform. Those five areas seem to be the kind of, they rise to the surface as the top areas that are barriers, that are a barrier to people achieving their American dream. And with the growth that we're seeing, not only in the demographics of the Latino community within the U.S., it's only becoming more important that we address these issues, because as we address these issues within the Latino community and break these barriers, it's actually going to help everyone, and it'll help all Americans succeed and achieve their American dream.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about school choice. As I said, I've always been a fan of school choice. It makes a lot of sense to me when you look at it logically. It makes a lot of sense. So here's my definition of school choice, and I'd like to have you agree or expand on the definition. To me, school choice is where you put the money basically in the hands of the parents. This is, of course, money that they're paying through property taxes, at least here in Texas. And it's maybe different in other states, but here is how we do it. And then you say to the parent, here's a voucher for X number of dollars, I guess. And you can use that voucher to put your kid in whatever school you want to put your kid in. If you want to keep them in the public school, feel free to do that. No problem there. But if you want to put, let's say, your kid in a school that maybe is a religious school or a school that maybe has values similar to yours, you can do that too. So that's my definition. Does that rhyme with your definition of school choice?
I think we kind of focus our definition. What I would say my definition is where it's more student focused,
mm-hmm.
And that we believe, like, pretty much, I mean, it's hard pressed to run into somebody who says they don't agree with this, but you know, we believe that all students should have access to a quality education. And it's not just about educational opportunity. It has to be quality educational opportunity. And because that's going to allow them to develop their unique talents and acquire the knowledge and skills and values that are necessary to be successful and so that they can find fulfillment in their lives. And so that's really, we focus it more on student, and because as with anything else, I mean, you look at kind of in a marketing term, we would look at the customer, mm-hmm. and in a very real sense, when it comes to education, your customer is the student. And so obviously family plays a very big impact in this, but so do educators. The value of educators and teachers is absolutely important. And those are things that play a part of this. But I would say personally, as well as for the organization, that we are student focused, and we believe that it requires flexibility and opportunity of quality education for our students.
Now, you may have seen this. I just saw a story today that in the state of Utah, the legislature has just passed, it hasn't been signed by the governor yet, so it's not the law of the state, but it's headed in that direction. Very likely he will sign it. Where the essence of the new law is that the money is going to follow the student, which is what I think you're saying. Mm-hmm. So the money will go to the student, who will then, I guess, select whatever school they want to select. Of course, in most cases, it's the parent who is obviously going to make that selection, obviously. But nevertheless, I just saw that happened. And I'm seeing more and more states move in that direction. For example, recently, the state of Arizona, the governor said that he would refund the money to the or give the money or voucher to the parents if the public schools did not want to open. I think the problem for many of us, and I like to get your comments on this, but the problem for many of us is that we love the teachers. I mean, look, I have nothing but admiration and affection for the parent, for the teachers who taught my sons. In fact, there were times when I went to see them and I said, thank you for putting up with these boys, because I know what a seventh grader is like. And for you to put up with him, I'm grateful for that. So we all love our teachers and we love the situation, but it seems to me that some of these schools, and it's not the teacher's fault, really. I think they're in a bad system. Some of these schools, I read the other day that in Baltimore, there was a kid who graduated with a GPA under 1. This kid does not know how to read and write, and yet he's graduating. I mean, they're giving him a high school diploma, and this kid is walking into a job market where what kind of a job is he going to get?
Right.
And there's so many examples like that in so many cities that, you know, the parents are saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And so I think a lot of it is the failure of public school systems, but not the teachers. I think most teachers are probably just as frustrated as we are in some of these examples, Tina.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We have to realize, and we absolutely, and I think what you just, you know, reiterated is that we realize that teachers are responsible for educating our children. when we put them in the school setting, that's what we're doing, right? We're putting them in a setting where the teacher is responsible for educating. And as it should be, not that it always is, but it should be that teachers are completely respected for fulfilling their responsibility. And that's what we all want to see. But at the same time, we have to realize that teaching and the educational needs of children must involve families, students, and teachers. So teachers have to be a part of the conversation. And that's just true because we need their experience and their expertise. I was a homeschool mom, and even through my homeschool journey, I networked with other moms, other homeschool moms. We did co-ops. We did classes together because I knew I needed that outside input, that outside vision on my, on my students. And, there were years there I was raising three teenage boys and home as a homeschool mom. So, and boys are different from girls and each child progresses differently. And that for us was what made homeschooling the perfect answer for us during those years is my oldest son, he happened to have been dysgraphic, ADD, and left-handed. You bundle that all up in a five-year-old, and kindergarten is not exactly the best place to be. And I say that from experience because during my time as a public school teacher, I was teaching kindergarten.
Well, you mentioned something very interesting, that boys are different from girls. I thought everybody knew that, but here recently you've got boys competing in girls' sports. And we're seeing that at the University of Pennsylvania with that swimmer. And you have to scratch your head and you say, who is allowing this? I mean, to me, the biological differences of men and women has nothing to do with civil rights. They're just mm-hmm. different. I mean, a 19-year-old boy, as we're seeing with his swimmer, is bigger than a 19-year-old girl. And not to get off on this, but this boy, this young man at the University of Pennsylvania, he was number 452. With boys. He's number one with girls. I mean, that's an injustice to the young women who are using sports to get scholarships and so on. So I'm glad that you said that, because that's one of the problems with a lot of public schools. I mean, a lot of parents say, wait a minute, what is this about, boys and girls going to the same bathroom? What happened? And some of that is driving, I think, a lot of the school choice. I really do.
Yeah.
A lot of parents are saying, we want to send our kids to a school that, is run by sensible people. Not everything is a civil rights case, as appears to be in many cases. Now, one of the ways, though, that we explain school choice, how are you selling? I use the word selling because everything is marketing. How are we doing this at the moment? In other words, if the objective was to have school choice, how successful have we been in this campaign? I mean, maybe I think we've been successful here in Texas, but how is it going in other parts of the country, Tina?
I think one of the key indicators is what's the achievement, right? I think one of the biggest achievements, one of the biggest things that the most recent statistics from the 2020 census came released was that the number of Latinos who are over 25 who hold a bachelor's degree has doubled since 1990. So in 10 years, we doubled. And but at that same during that same time period is also when we've seen the explosion of school choice programs in many districts. Also, we've seen an explosion from the 90s on in homeschooling. It did. There was already a growing homeschool movement before the pandemic. I think the pandemic only increased that. And the just alternative kind of student-focused, unique learning opportunities. You saw pod schools. You saw an increase in magnet schools, which were, charter schools. And magnet schools and charter schools are a type of public school. But what I'm pointing out is I think we saw more options in that decade from 1990s to now. We've seen more options kind of bloom. And with that, we have seen the fruits of that in achievement by our students. And so that's one key indicator, right? That's a key indicator of whether school choice has been successful. We've seen parents who choose to do a school choice option that's unique and fits their needs. They tend to, by 70%, they tend to say they are more pleased with their educational option that they've chosen for their family. And so we see this parental satisfaction. We see parents more engaged because they're in a system that they agree with. You know, good, bad, whatever, right? Some of us from my generation may not have the best memories of school. and I think that's kind of every generation, right? Some of us just, you know. And so that kind of, it kind of casts, you know, a fog over how they choose to be involved with their children's school. And, but when parents have a choice and are able to make a choice that's uniquely fit for their family and for their student, and you have lots of family like mine where we had a lot of kids and we did what worked best, then you have parents who are more involved. And we also know that parental involvement raises the success, the educational success of students as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Happy parents is always very important. Let me go to the Latino population. This is my impression. I could be wrong. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But I get the impression that a lot of the school choice moms or kids are more suburban. You know, they're generally more upper middle class, upscale middle class. And that's because the mother doesn't work. She can stay home and teach the kids. But in the Latino community, what I hear a lot is, well, you know, I love to homeschool my kids, but I got to work. So how can I do it? Now, I think that opens up the opportunity for school choice much more so in the Latino community. But something I've heard too in talking to Latino parents is that Latino parents are very conservative, as you know, very traditional. And one of the things that they do not like, and I'm generalizing, but I've heard this so many times, I think it's true. A lot of Latino parents don't like, for example, not having a Christmas party. They don't understand that because it's just their tradition and they're religious people. And there's like saying, what do you mean? You know, we call it winter rather than Christmas. And a lot of that stuff that sort of challenges their traditions. And I mean, when I grew up, it was called a Christmas party. We had a Christmas concert, as I recall, Santa Claus would show up in the Christmas concert. But now it seems like a lot of schools, particularly public schools, are going in a more secular direction. And I think in the case of Hispanic families, very traditional, they kind of like the idea of their kid going to a school where they celebrate Christmas. So that's some of my impressions. I could be wrong, but just some of my impressions when I talk to Latinos about school choice. They tend to favor school choice more than homeschooling, as I said before, just out of sheer necessity that the mother has to work and no one's going to be at home to teach the kids. So that's kind of a long-winded question, but just to at least tell you what I've seen of the Hispanic community from the perspective of education, Tina.
Yeah, well, I would say that my experience as a homeschool mom, really we were part of a very diverse group in the Texas area, and we were really active with not only the national organization, but the state-level organization and locally. So I was the president of one of the largest homeschool groups in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so we had a lot of variety. I don't think it maybe is exactly as what you're thinking. And then to that point as well for today, I live in, just north of me is a city that, Irving, Texas, that is known as the most diverse city. I forget their ranking, how many different nationalities they have. But they have a strong percentage of Latino students. And in most of the key areas that I work in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we have a strong percentage of Latino students and minority students. And we're seeing a lot of participation in the school choice options that are offered through the public school. I think it's continuing to grow. I don't have exact numbers for it. So this is really my personal experience. In Texas, right, we're one of the top five states for Latino population. And so it's very, I mean, I run into homeschoolers all across the state and other families that choose some of these school choice options that are available at their local school district, not to mention Catholic education and Christian education. People who choose and want to make sure that, yes, education is important, but that imparting of their values, not only from home but from school, is passed on as well. So I think we see a predominance of the Latino community in Catholic education, and we continue to see that growing trend in various other school options, whether that be a hybrid charter school situation or a magnet school or a homeschool or a pod, you know, a co-op of some sort. There's really not much lacking anymore. And I think part of that, though, is demographics driven, right? Just we live in Texas and our population is just growing exponentially. The Latino population in Texas, not only has it been high historically, at least for the past few years, but it's on the grow.
Right. Well, we're certainly getting a lot of people moving into Texas, that's for sure. I mean, it's one of the states that is growing the most, and I would think that school choice is an attraction in bringing people to Texas. Let me ask you a couple of questions. This is such a fascinating topic. We're going to have to do a follow-up because I can think of another 30 minutes that we can talk about. And we're just, like, as I say, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg today, or whatever the expression is. But two questions that I always get when I talk about school choice. The first question, I guess, is, what happens to the public schools? Do they all disappear? That's the first question. The assumption being that school choice is intended to destroy public education. Mm-hmm. I know that's not the case, but that's mm-hmm. what many people say, particularly the opponents of school choice. And then I remember hearing this next point from a lady who works with the teachers union. And her point was, well, you're going to kill the teachers because they're mm-hmm. not going to be able to make as much money in school choice as they do, let's say, as a public teacher. So those are two topics. If you could address them, I know they're complicated, but if you could touch those two, what happens to public schools and what happens to the teachers? Can they make any money teaching school choice or in a school choice environment? I mean,
right. Well, so statistically, what research and data shows is that when school choice increases and there is a nearby public school, by kind of unsurprising marketing or market bearing theory, I guess might be the right word, those schools tend to rise to the occasion. And what has been absolutely verified and found out is that when there is school choice really booms around a public school, those public schools begin to suddenly get higher test scores and they up their game. And from personal experience as a teacher, my suspicion is that those teachers and that principal and the administration are more willing and open towards giving those teachers the funding and the freedom to really tailor education to what the students need, which always allows for the students to flourish. And so it's a boon. Now, as to your other question about teachers, can teachers make money? The Libre actually just hosted a luncheon in the Dallas-Fort Worth area a few weeks ago called Latinos Dream Higher. And one of the things we do is we focus on solutions. We always say that, you know, anyone can get a room full of people to complain about a problem. We like to get a room full of people together to talk about solutions to the problem. So we invited a school board member from DISD, one of the largest school districts in the area. We invited someone who's on the cutting edge of research on how religious activity affects somebody's educational opportunity and outcomes. And we had just an array of really interesting and really top Latino leaders in education. One of the most key points that I think was shared is that the school board member that we had for the Dallas ISD, his district within the entire school district was known, was recognized as the most innovative school district in all of the state of Texas. And they were doing that, and some of the key programs, he had in his district some of the worst performing schools. And so they really revamped and really looked at what worked. And so one of the programs that they implemented was looking across their entire district and finding the best teachers that they had at each grade level in their district-wide network and incentivizing them with higher pay and transferring them with their consent. They weren't just forced to go, but transferring them to these schools in the areas that they were needed most. So they were earning premium and being recognized. It goes back to responsibility and respect. They were responsible for a huge undertaking of taking on a poor performing school, not just a class, not just a student, but a school. And they were taking on that responsibility, but they were being respected by giving the flexibility and the funding and the incentives needed to go in there and take that under their arm. And doing that turned those schools. In fact, one of the schools in that district went from being one of the worst performing schools in the nation, one of the elementary schools, went to outperforming an elementary school in Highland Park, which is which is an affluent area in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex. So innovation, freedom, flexibility, those things work. Those things are solutions. When we give freedom and flexibility to our teachers to innovate, they always rise to the call, and our students are the ones who prosper because of that. And that flows out to our community, because with successful students coming out of our education system, we're going to have a much better and a more successful and prosperous community.
Absolutely. I guess a little competition doesn't hurt public education either. I think that's what you're saying there as well. But no, I mean, this is a fascinating topic, and we're just about out of time. But the good news about that is that we'll do a follow-up, and we'll talk about other areas. Today, we were just kind of doing a very general presentation. But school choice is one of my favorite topics. This is something I've believed in for a long time, because I think, like you say, it really helps the community, and it turns out better students, and the parents are more involved. We have seen here over the last year with the pandemic and all the mandates and all the problems how dissatisfied a lot of parents are with what's happening in the schools. And I think that was the bad news. The good news is that the parents got involved, and more parents got involved. And I believe very strongly that in 2022, the election coming up, that I think you're going to see education be a very significant part of how people how people vote one way or the other. But you promised me you're going to come back, right? You're going to come back for a follow?
I absolutely promise. And, I'm looking forward to it.
What we will do the next time, Tina, is that we will focus maybe in different areas. And maybe today we were speaking more generally, but the next time we will focus in areas, and I'll let you pick some topics that you think would be of interest. So Libre Initiative is the name of the organization. My good friend Israel Ortega works there or is a part of that. And I would say all you have to do is put Libre, which is L-I-B-R-E, and that'll get you to the website, I would think. Or is the website Libre Initiative or?
The website is libre.org.
Okay. All right. There you go. And we'll put it in the show information as well so that people can click on it. But thank you so much, Tina, for joining us tonight. Thank you for being a part of this. I think we had fun. I had a lot of fun. I think we learned a few things. I certainly did. And I believe very strongly in school choice, as you know I do. And I think it's good for the country. It's good for the parents, for the teachers, for the students. And as you indicated, it doesn't kill the public schools. In many ways, it actually has the opposite effect. It makes the public schools more accountable. They get in the game more because they know there's a little competition. So is there anything else that you want to say, Tina, that we didn't cover?
Oh, there's so much. You're right. That's why we're going to have to come back for another round.
Well, we'll do several. We'll do several of these because this is a great topic, and I thank you so much for being a part of this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas thanking you for tuning in tonight, and thank you for joining us for this conversation about school choice. And thanks to my friend Tina Aviles for joining us as well. Good night, Tina.
Good night. Thank you.
All right. Well, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Well, thank you for listening to our conversation with Tina Aviles, the Libre Initiative. You can find them online. They have a lot of stuff online. I would recommend that you check out their website. But one of the areas of great interest to me, of course, is school choice. And we're going to have more interviews with Tina over the next year or so talking about school choice. I think politically, 2022 is going to be a big year for school choice. And that's why I think we're going to talk a great deal about it. I think this is going to be a key year for moving more and more in the direction of school choice. You're seeing it in some of the states, and I think it's just going to get bigger and bigger. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. I hope your team wins the Super Bowl, and we'll talk to you the next time.